from stpetecatalyst.com.
Joining me on Impact Catalyst today is the Executive Director of Neighbourly, Mr. David Lamacca. Welcome, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Well, we had never met before last weekend, but we got to spend 4 hours on a yacht, which was pretty awesome.
We did. We had Neighbourly had its 12th annual St. Petersburg Regatta, which is kind of put on between the Sailing Association of St. Pete and the Yacht Club of St. Pete. And all started 12 years ago when a volunteer who would deliver home-delivered meals was a Yacht Club member and said, let's do a race and let's do it for something good. So this was our 12th year, our best year, and it was great meeting you on the boat. It was great sponsor of the boat, it was a 69-foot yacht who welcomed all of our sponsors and to a delightful day on the water.
And even got to fire a cannon.
And you got to fire the cannon.
Twice.
Oh, that's right.
Twice.
That's right, you did.
So for each of the winners in each class got the cannon.
Right.
Well, you know, we're here to talk about Neighbourly. It's an amazing organization. It stood the test of time. You know, really serving our seniors and doing a wide swath of important work. So let's just start with an overview of why Neighbourly is awesome.
Well, Neighbourly's been around since 1965. It was one of the first federally recognized Meals on Wheels provider in the country. And it started out literally at a little chicken shack in St. Pete. And they packaged up a couple of meals. They knew they had some homebound seniors, and they started delivering meals to that. Shortly after that, they got a pilot program funded by the federal government just a year or two later. Shortly after that, Neighbourly opened one of the first federally recognized adult daycare centers for persons with dementia, different types of dementias with Alzheimer's degrees, disease, individuals with cognitive disorders. And really, all of this is the meals and the daycare was all an attempt to keep people at home, to keep seniors at home and not into any type of other facility or institution, if you will, especially back in the 60s. And it's been around forever. It is a small organization with 100 employees, but over 1,000 volunteers who deliver the meals daily, who help out with the daycares, driven by a board of directors of 10 community leaders, many of whom there were a few of them met on the boat that day and later that evening. So it really is an organization that has stood the test of time, including the COVID, but has really been kind of a solid sense of hope for seniors, especially those who are isolated and homebound.
And there's a couple of things that I want to dig into a little bit, but you did share one amazing statistic. A real accomplishment is that you didn't miss any time during COVID. You actually, because as you said, you know, when we had our conversation then was people need to eat. People are still in their homes alone now more so than ever because of COVID. And so you had to keep going. Can you talk a little bit about that experience?
Sure. When COVID really hit, which was what, March of 2020 was when the impact was and people started staying home and things, we had a conversation and said, we are essential workers. Mm-hmm. Seniors cannot go without nutrition, without a daily meal, without that daily visit. So we stood up and said, we're going to deliver. At the time, we had a significant shortage. Well, there's a number of things that happened at that time. We were delivering about just over 1,000 meals a day at that time, and there was about 1,200 waiting for a meal on a waiting list, which is a sad statement on our society. Of all the things we do and all the monies we tend to give to new things, we don't take care of the things that are vulnerable, and we don't take care of the things that have been around the longest, and that's our seniors. Mm-hmm. So there was a silver lining to COVID is that came up with more money to feed them. And that was great. So we had funding to buy an additional 1,000 meals a day, but I didn't have volunteers to deliver 1,000 more meals a day. So I had to use paid staff. So we restructured, reorganized, repurposed a lot of our employees, including myself, and we were delivering meals. Unfortunately, in the world of finances, you know, we get the same $7 from the federal government. But the meals didn't cost $7 anymore. With the little delivery cost of paid staff, it was significantly higher. So we took a beating financially mm-hmm. by doing the right thing. And even our vehicles, to drive people to their appointments, we have a fleet of 50 buses and vans and cars to get seniors mm-hmm. to appointments and to shopping things and to pharmacies. And where we would used to be able to get, you know, 4 or 6 or 8 or 10 people on a bus or a car, a truck or a bus or a van, we were doing one. Because of social distancing. So that trip we used to cost was $15, cost us $65. And again, we had to do it and it was the right thing to do. But at that time, our volunteers were fabulous. Instead of retreating and staying indoors, our volunteers literally doubled. From March of 2000 to March of 2021, they were doubled. We had over 1,000 volunteers who were participating. Our staff were phenomenal. We managed to avoid any major illnesses, any death. not only of our staff, who our average staff age is 61 at Neighborly. We're not a young bunch. Our average volunteers is 64, also not a young bunch. And our average consumer is 83. And so when you think about all those things, we are all the most at-risk population, but we still all came to work every day. We still did it, and we still managed to do it in a healthy way. So we still managed to do the distancing and the masking and the washing of hands and all the things we were supposed to do. But with all the changes and everything that's happened with it, we still delivered meals to people's homes. And that was the bottom line. We had to keep doing that.
Well, that's a fantastic accomplishment. Congratulations. And it really speaks, you know, it's beautiful that we have this support system and you know, and grants and government money and all of that. But it is just, there's a strange specificity to it. And like you said, it's, you know, you can get the money for the food, which on paper looks great. They have this big influx of money, but it has to specifically be used to buy food, which doesn't get that food delivered. And it doesn't account for extra trips that you have to make because of social distancing, which is extra gas and extra maintenance on the car. And all of that now becomes an extra burden that those new dollars can't help with. And therefore, that goes back to those, you know, private donations and the support from the community that lets, you know, take some of that weight away.
Yeah. And in a simple way, you know, if you just, prior to COVID, we delivered about 333,000 meals. So this is a hot delivered meal. This is not, you know, a box of 14 frozen. I mean, there's some of that, but very little of that. Most of it is one-on-one, face and ears on the consumer to make sure they're okay. And we did about 333,000 of those in 2019. That number went up to 588,000, a quarter million more meals with the same staff, and at that time, a growing number of volunteers. But again, back to math, if there's a quarter more million and you're losing $5 a meal, it doesn't take a genius to figure out it's going to be a challenge. And it's, even the people who make a lot, again, I don't want to go into political spin, but the people who make the rules sometimes are people who've never operated something in their life. And so everybody wants to fund new, even the American, now they call it the rescue plan. Well, the rescue plan is all about new initiatives. And for short-term programs, they're going to be out of money in a couple of years. Instead of going to the people who really stood up, proved they were essential, and again, hurt their organization, the process, but it was still the right thing to do.
And, you know, you'd mentioned one thing I want to dig into a little bit just so we understand the context. You mentioned that you're helping keep seniors in their home. Why is that a good thing? Why is that important? How does that improve their quality?
Well, for a couple of reasons. From a human standpoint, somebody always wants to be in their home. You know, nobody wants to be in a facility. Nobody wants to be alone. Nobody wants to die alone. These are, you know, there's a lot of fear in isolation. There's a lot of fear in the unknown. If you're watching the news and it's bad news and bad news and bad news, the fear is really making the isolation significantly worse. There have been recent studies come out that probably most people have seen this at one point, but the effects of isolation is far worse than the effects of cigarette smoking. And you know what that's doing to people. So it is really important to us to keep people at home. So from a human standpoint, that's first. From a family standpoint, when we're able to do things like this, it allows caregivers, a lot of these folks who aren't alone are staying home with a loved one. Maybe it's a spouse, maybe it's a son or a daughter who are going to work. Many of those people were essential workers during the crisis as well. So these are nurses who were taking care of mom or dad, had to go be a nurse, but couldn't leave mom at home. So we at least were able to come and either bring them meals or bring them to a daycare site where we have three of those in the county, and we could pick them up. One of the only daycares who pick up our consumers and bring them home. So we could pick them up and bring them back home. So it allows them to stay at home, allows family members to keep working and loved ones. So, but financially, the cost is 10 times greater to house an individual in a facility of some type, assisted living, long-term care, nursing. Depending on the levels, it gets higher. But it's over 10 times more expensive to do that than to provide a meal at somebody's home. Costs as little as $2,000 a year. So when you think about the financial implication on the Medicaid system, who take Medicaid and Medicare systems to pay for that, it's a no-brainer that this is a model that we really should be using far more than we do.
Makes a lot of sense. And to accomplish that, you've got, so we've talked a couple of different services you've had that all kind of wrap around accomplishing that goal of giving them that, you know, more extended stay at home, obviously delivering the food and the companionships that comes along with those visits, transportation to and from pharmacy and some of those types of places. And then when needed, even a daycare option as well. So they have a place to go for the day if their caregiver's out. So how does that all play into the mix of services? Any other services that you also
offer?
Well,
those are the big three. And, you know, we stumble into providing home shore services. Mm-hmm. And I'm living proof of somebody who I delivered a meal and I watched the woman in her house she couldn't have her windows open because she didn't have any screens. Mm. And it was like, I can fix a screen. And so I said, I'll be here next Wednesday to do my delivery. And I brought my tools and fixed the screens. We have a number of volunteers who do that. We started some home chore for that. We got a little bit of funding along the way from a few grants, a couple of $5,000 grants. And we only use that money to buy materials. Mm-hmm. If it was to buy those screens or ceiling fans, or sometimes it's a grab bar. But all intended to keep somebody at home and improve the quality of their life. So those are things that happen along the way. But even our transportation, you know, we take folks to the necessary things they need to, whether it's food. We also use we'll use our vehicles to work with other food banks to pick up bags of groceries. And so we're also delivering bags of groceries to folks at home, to seniors at home as well, because there is significant, you know, whether it's you think about the bigger players, the Metropolitan Ministries or the Feeding Tampa Bays of the world, there's a lot of smaller food banks, whether it's RCS here in Pinellas County or other places that we partner with. So we'll come with our vehicles. And now the seniors are coming back out, we'll bring the seniors with us in the buses and they can shop at these food banks and actually shop, which is a nice feeling, a little bit of dignity, a little selection. And they're picking it up and we're putting on the bus and we're getting them home with their groceries. So those are all things we've just done. There's no funding for it. Right. It's just been able to use what we've had. I hope my board members aren't listening because we're still losing money in doing this and we can only do that so long. But again, it's, you know, back to doing the right things. But we'll also take people to social things. A number of them called us up and they asked to go to a dinner theater. They wanted to go to the art gallery. We just took two of our dining sites. We have two dining sites, senior cafes, another thing that we operate. We have 9 senior cafes where the seniors will come in every day about 11 o'clock for socialization, education. So we'll teach them how to work cell phones or computer problems or how to FaceTime or whatever it is that most of us still struggle how to do. But we'll bring education in and we'll bring a meal to them and we'll pick them up and bring them there and bring them home. And we'll bring groups of people. So if it's a community and there's 4, 5, or 6 neighbors, we'll do that. If it's 6 neighbors that want to go to the countryside mall to go shopping for the day, we'll take them there. And we'll do all of those things that are all geared, again, for quality of life. And it's all those little things that we do that maybe all of us take for granted that we're able to jump in our car and go to the mall and do those things. But there are 280,000 residents that in Pinellas County over 60 years old, and over 83,000 of them live alone. And so, you know, again, many of those people do have the means to get around and things, but 40,000 of those live below the poverty level. So even if they could get around, there's not a lot of resources for those on poverty.
It's very compelling. So if someone watching this sees that the value and wants to be more neighborly, what are the ways? Obviously, financial support is always welcome, as you mentioned, some of those challenges. What are some of the other ways people can get involved?
Well, the easiest way to do anything is we're the simplest website. It's just neighborly.org. And it's not, you know, it's an easy way to get there. There's a donate button. There's a volunteer button. Money always goes a long way. And money, local money is important to us. The government requires us to match everything. For every dollar they give us, for every 90 cents, basically, they give us, we have to come up with 10 cents to make it a dollar. And so when we get $8 million from the federal government, we need $800,000 locally. We struggle with that, and which is why we did the regatta, which is why we do annual campaigns, which is why we write a lot of letters to a lot of faithful givers. And we have givers in Pinellas County who have been giving to us for 40 and 50 years. Some people give us $10 a week, $10 a month, and we'll take that as much as we'll take up, you know, $10,000.
Yeah.
But the volunteer opportunities never end. Whether it's delivering a meal, whether somebody has a skill, maybe they have a skill in marketing and they could help administration, as we don't have a marketing, but maybe they are a musician. Maybe they can go play piano. Maybe they can juggle at one of our daycares. Those are all things to really engage the seniors so they are being involved in things. We have artists come in and help people draw. So everybody has a skill set. Everybody has a special purpose. And as they have that, You know, if we could take that and help them out. A lot of these folks are seniors themselves and they're retired. Maybe this gives them a little bit something to do and maybe something more to kind of accomplish in life. So any of those things help with. When COVID hit, we wanted to give the vaccine to all of our employees, their family members, the volunteers, their family members, and the seniors and anybody who lives with them. We were able to do that because we had 20 volunteers and 2 pharmacists that were volunteers with our organization. They provided the injections. They provided the medication oversight that we were able to do that. Again, completely unfunded. The government gave us the medications, but it was volunteers who were able to drive that for us. So there are, like I said, the opportunities never end. If we were a northerner, I would say when I was a kid growing up and taking care of my senior neighbors, I taught my sons, if it's snowing really hard, you go to the neighbors next door and you shovel their driveway. And that's what, you know, how I grew up. That's how my boys grew up. And so there's still those opportunities here, maybe not to shovel the driveway, but maybe to pick up branches after a very breezy afternoon thunderstorm. It's something that simple that will give somebody, and it gives, you think about the hope that it gives that senior, that individual. Somebody's looking out for me. Somebody cares. I'm not alone. And I think that just goes a long, long way.
That's great. Well, it's a whole lot of impact from a small but mighty organization, and it's super impressive. And you know, I'm saying that based on this conversation and even the greater detail we went into another conversation. Just impressive operation all the way around. And I really appreciate your time, David Lamacco, Executive Director of Neighborly. Appreciate you coming in, and we'll look forward to supporting you.
Thanks for having us. We're always needing to get the word out. It's amazing, as big as we are, as long as we've been here, people still don't know about us. So,
thank you.
We appreciate it.
From stpcatalyst.com.